Chapter 4 The Siege of Gondor. Pippin was roused by Gandalf. Candles were lit in their chamber, for only a dim twilight came through the windows. The air was heavy as with approaching thunder.
"What's the time?" said Pippin, yawning.
"Past the second hour," said Gandalf. "Time to get up and make yourself presentable. You are summoned to the Lord of the City to learn your new duties."
"And will he provide breakfast?"
"No, I have provided it. All that you will get till noon. Food is now doled out by order."
Pippin looked ruefully at the small loaf and, he thought, very inadequate pat of butter which was set out for him, beside a cup of thin milk.
"Why did you bring me here?" he said.
"You know quite well," said Gandalf, "to keep you out of mischief. And if you don't like being here, you can remember that you brought it on yourself."
Pippin said no more.
Before long he was walking with Gandalf once more down the cold corridor to the door of the Tower Hall. There Denethor sat in a grey gloom, like an old patient spider, Pippin thought. He didn't seem to have moved since the day before. He beckoned Gandalf to a seat, but Pippin was left for a while standing unheeded. Presently the old man turned to him.
"Well, Master Peregrine, I hope that you used yesterday to your profit and to your liking, though I fear that the board is barer in this city than you could wish."
Pippin had an uncomfortable feeling that most of what he had said or done was somehow known to the Lord of the City, and much was guessed of what he thought as well. He didn't answer.
"What would you do in my service?"
"I thought, sir, that you would tell me my duties."
"I will, when I learn what you are fit for," said Denethor. "But that I shall learn soonest, maybe, if I keep you beside me. The esquire of my chamber has begged leave to go to the out-garrison, so you shall take his place for a while. You shall wait on me, bear errands, and talk to me, if war and council leave me any leisure. Can you sing?"
"Yes," said Pippin. "Well, yes, well enough for my own people. But we have no songs fit for great halls and evil times, Lord. We seldom sing of anything more terrible than wind or rain, and most of my songs are about things that make us laugh, or about food and drink, of course."
"And why should such songs be unfit for my halls, or for such hours as these? We who have lived long under the shadow may surely listen to echoes from a land untroubled by it. Then we may feel that our vigil was not fruitless, though it may have been thankless."
Pippin's heart sank. He didn't relish the idea of singing any song of the Shire to the Lord of Minas Tirith, certainly not the comic ones that he knew best. They were too, well, rustic for such an occasion. He was, however, spared the ordeal for the present. He was not commanded to sing. Denethor turned to Gandalf, asking questions about the Rohirrim and their policies, and the position of Éomer, the king's nephew. Pippin marvelled at the amount that the Lord seemed to know about a people that lived far away, though it must, he thought, be many years since Denethor himself had ridden abroad. Presently Denethor waved to Pippin, and dismissed him again for a while.
"Go to the armories of the citadel," he said, "and get you there the livery and gear of the tower. It will be ready. It was commanded yesterday. Return when you are clad."
It was as he said, and Pippin soon found himself arrayed in strange garments, all of black and silver. He had a small hauberk, its rings forged of steel, maybe, yet black as jet, and a high-crowned helm with small raven wings on either side, set with a silver star in the centre of the circlet. Above the mail was a short surcoat of black, but broidered on the breast in silver with the token of the tree. His old clothes were folded and put away, but he was permitted to keep the grey cloak of Lorien, though not to wear it when on duty. He looked now, had he known it, verily Ernil y Ferianeth, the Prince of the Halflings, that folk had called him, but he felt uncomfortable, and the gloom began to weigh on his spirits. It was dark and dim all day. From the sunless dawn until evening the heavy shadow had deepened, and all hearts in the city were oppressed.
Far above, a great cloud streamed slowly westward from the black land, devouring light, borne upon a wind of war. But below, the air was still and breathless, as if all the Vale of Anduin waited for the onset of a ruinous storm. About the 11th hour, released at last for a while from service, Pippin came out and went in search of food and drink to cheer his heavy heart and to make his task of waiting more supportable. In the messes he met Beregond again, who had just come from an errand over the Pelennor out to the guard towers upon the causeway. Together they strolled out to the walls, for Pippin felt imprisoned indoors and stifled even in the lofty citadel. Now they sat side by side again, in the embrasure looking eastward, where they had eaten and talked the day before. It was the sunset hour, but the great pall had now stretched far into the west, and only as it sank at last into the sea did the sun escape to send out a brief farewell gleam before the night, even as Frodo saw it at the crossroads, touching the head of the fallen king. But to the fields of the Pelennor, under the shadow of Min Doluin, there came no gleam. They were brown and drear. Already it seemed years to Pippin since he had sat there before, in some half-forgotten time when he had still been a hobbit, a light-hearted wanderer touched little by the perils he had passed through. Now he was one small soldier in a city preparing for a great assault, clad in the proud but sombre manner of the Tower of God. In some other time and place, Pippin might have been pleased with his new array, but he knew now that he was taking part in no play. He was in deadly earnest the servant of a grim master in the greatest peril. The hauberk was burdensome, and the helm weighed upon his head. His cloak he had cast aside upon the seat. He turned his tired gaze away from the darkling fields below and yawned, and then he sighed. "You are weary of this day," said Beregond. "Yes," said Pippin. "Very. Tired out with idleness and waiting. I've kicked my heels at the door of my master's chamber for many slow hours while he's debated with Gandalf and the prince and other great persons, and I'm not used, Master Beregond, to waiting hungry on others while they eat. It's a sore trial for a hobbit, that. No doubt you will think I should feel the honour more deeply. But what is the good of such honour? Indeed, what is the good even of food and drink under this creeping shadow? What does it mean? The very air seems thick and brown. Do you often have such glooms when the wind is in the east?"
"Nay," said Beregond, "this is no weather of the world. This is some device of his malice, some broil of fume from the mountain of fire that he sends to darken hearts and counsel. And so it doth indeed. I wish the Lord Faramir would return. He would not be dismayed. But now, who knows if he will ever come back across the river out of the darkness?"
"Yes," said Pippin. "Gandalf, too, is anxious. He was disappointed, I think, not to find Faramir here. And where has he got to himself? He left the Lord's council before the noon meal, and in no good mood either, I thought. Perhaps he has some foreboding of bad news." Suddenly, as they talked, they were stricken dumb, frozen, as it were, to listening stones. Pippin cowered down with his hands pressed to his ears, but Beregond, who had been looking out from the battlement as he spoke to Faramir, remained there, stiffened, staring out with starting eyes. Pippin knew the shuddering cry that he had heard. It was the same that he had heard long ago in the marriage of the Shah, but now it was grown in power and hatred, piercing the heart with a poisonous despair. At last Beregond spoke with an effort.
"They have come," he said. "Take courage and look. There are fell things below."
Reluctantly Pippin climbed on to the seat and looked out over the wall. The Pelennor lay dim beneath him, fading away to the scarce-guessed line of the great river. But now, wheeling swiftly across it, like shadows of untimely night, he saw in the middle airs below him five bird-like forms, horrible as carrion fowl, yet greater than eagles, cruel as death. Now they swooped near, venturing almost within bowshot of the walls. Now they circled away.
"Black riders," muttered Pippin. "Black riders of the air. But see, Beregond," he cried, "they are looking for something, surely. See how they wheel and swoop, always down to that point over there. And can you see something moving on the ground? Dark little things. Yes, men on horses. Four or five. Ah, I cannot stand it. Gandalf, Gandalf, save us."
Another long screech rose and fell, and he threw himself back again from the wall, panting like a hunted animal. Faint and seemingly remote through that shuddering cry, he heard winding up from below the sound of a trumpet ending on a long, high note.
"Faramir! The Lord Faramir! It is his call!" cried Beregond. "Brave heart! But how can he win to the gate if these foul hell-hawks have other weapons than fear? But look! They hold on! They will make the gate! No, the horses are running mad! Look! The men are thrown! They are running on foot!
No, one is still up, but he rides back to the others. That will be the captain. He can master both beasts and men. Ah, there one of the foul things is stooping on him.
Help, help! Will no one go out to him? Faramir!
With that, Beregond sprang away and ran off into the gloom, ashamed of his terror. While Beregond of the guard thought first of the captain whom he loved, Pippin got up and peered out. At that moment he caught a flash of white and silver coming from the north, like a small star down on the dusky fields. It moved with the speed of an arrow, and grew as it came, converging swiftly with the flight of the four men towards the gate. It seemed to Pippin that a pale light was spread about it, and the heavy shadows gave way before it. And then, as it drew near, he thought that he heard, like an echo in the walls, a great voice calling.
"Gandalf!" he cried. "Gandalf! He always turns up when things are darkest. Go on! Go on, White Rider! Gandalf! Gandalf!" he shouted wildly, like an onlooker at a great race urging on a runner who is far beyond encouragement.
But now the dark swooping shadows were aware of the newcomer. One wheeled towards him, but it seemed to Pippin that he raised his hand, and from it a shaft of white light stabbed upwards. The Nazgul gave a long, wailing cry and swerved away, and with that the four others wavered, and then rising in swift spirals, they passed away eastward, vanishing into the lowering cloud above, and down on the Pelennor it seemed for a while less dark. Pippin watched, and he saw the horseman and the white rider meet and halt, waiting for those on foot. Men now hurried out to them from the city. And soon they all passed from sight under the outer walls, and he knew that they were entering the gate. Guessing that they would come at once to the tower and the steward, he hurried to the entrance of the citadel. There he was joined by many others who had watched the race and the rescue from the high walls. It was not long before a clamour was heard in the streets leading up from the outer circles, and there was much cheering and crying of the names of Faramir and Mithrandir. Presently Pippin saw torches, and followed by a press of people, two horsemen riding slowly. One was in white but shining no longer, pale in the twilight, as if his fire was spent or veiled. The other was dark, and his head was bowed. They dismounted, and as grooms took Shadowfax and the other horse, they walked forward to the sentinel at the gate. Gandalf steadily, his grey cloak flung back, and a fire still smouldering in his eyes. The other, clad all in green, slowly, swaying a little, as a weary or a wounded man. Pippin pressed forward as they passed under the lamp beneath the gate arch, and when he saw the pale face of Faramir, he caught his breath. It was the face of one who has been assailed by a great fear or anguish, but has mastered it, and now is quiet. Proud and grave he stood for a moment, as he spoke to the guard, and Pippin, gazing at him, saw how closely he resembled his brother Boromir, whom Pippin had liked from the first, admiring the great man's lordly but kindly manner. Yet suddenly for Faramir his heart was strangely moved with a feeling that he had not known before. Here was one with an air of high nobility such as Aragorn at times revealed, less high perhaps, yet also less incalculable and remote,
one of the kings of men, born into a later time, but touched with the wisdom and sadness of the elder race. He knew now why Beregond spoke his name with love. He was a captain that men would follow, that he would follow, even under the shadow of the black wings.
"Faramir!" he cried aloud with the others. "Faramir!"
And Faramir, catching his strange voice among the clamour of the men of the city, turned and looked down at him and was amazed.
"Whence came you?" he said. "A halfling? And in the livery of the tower? Whence?"
But with that Gandalf stepped to his side and spoke.
"He came with me from the land of the halflings," he said. "He came with me. But let us not tarry here. There is much to say and to do, and you are weary. He shall come with us. Indeed he must, for if he does not forget his new duties more easily than I do, he must attend on his lord again within this hour. Come, Pippin, follow us."
So at length they came to the private chamber of the lord of the city. There deep seats were set, about a brazier of charcoal, and wine was brought, and there Pippin, hardly noticed, stood behind the chair of Denethor, and felt his weariness little, so eagerly did he listen to all that was said. When Faramir had taken white bread and drunk a draught of wine, he sat upon a low chair at his father's left hand. Removed a little upon the other side sat Gandalf, in a chair of carven wood, and he seemed at first to be asleep. For at the beginning Faramir spoke only of the errand upon which he had been sent out 10 days before, and he brought tidings of Ithilien, and of the movements of the enemy and his allies, and he told of the fight on the road, when the men of Harad and their great beast were overthrown, a captain reporting to his master such matters as had often been heard before, small things of border war that now seemed useless and petty, shorn of their renown. Then suddenly Faramir looked at Pippin. "But now we come to strange matters," he said. "For this is not the first halfling that I have seen walking out of the northern legends into the southlands." At that Gandalf sat up and gripped the arms of his chair, but he said nothing, and with a look stopped the exclamation on Pippin's lips. Denethor looked at their faces and nodded his head, as though in sign that he had read much there before it was spoken. Slowly, while the others sat silent and still, Faramir told his tale, with his eyes for the most part on Gandalf, though now and again his glance strayed to Pippin, as if to refresh his memory of others that he had seen. As his story was unfolded, of his meeting with Frodo and his servant, and of the events at Henneth Arnoun, Pippin became aware that Gandalf's hands were trembling as they clutched the carven wood. White they seemed now, and very old, and as he looked at them, suddenly with a thrill of fear, Pippin knew that Gandalf himself, was troubled, even afraid. The air of the room was close and still. At last, when Faramir spoke of his parting with the travellers, and of their resolve to go to Kirith Ungol, his voice fell, and he shook his head and sighed. Then Gandalf sprang up.
"Kirith Ungol? Morgul Vale?" he said. "The time, Faramir, the time! When did you part with them? When would they reach that accursed valley?"
"I parted with them in the morning 2 days ago," said Faramir. "It is 15 leagues thence to the Vale of the Morgul Duin, if they went straight south, and then they would be still 5 leagues westward of the accursed tower. At swiftest they could not come there before today, and maybe they have not come there yet. Indeed, I see what you fear, but the darkness is not due to their venture. It began yester-eve, and all Ithilien was under shadow last night. It is clear to me that the enemy has long planned an assault on us, and its hour has already been determined before ever the travellers left my keeping." Gandalf paced the floor.
"The morning of 2 days ago, nigh on 3 days of journey. How far is the place where you parted?"
"Some 25 leagues as a bird flies," answered Faramir. "But I could not come more swiftly. Yester-eve I lay at Caer Andros, the long isle in the river northward, which we hold in defence, and horses are kept on the hither bank. As the dark drew on, I knew that haste was needed, so I rode thence, with 3 others that could also be horsed.
the rest of my company I sent south to strengthen the garrison at the fords of Osgiliath. I hope that I have not done ill." He looked at his father. "Ill?" cried Denethor, and his eyes flashed suddenly. "Why do you ask? The men were under your command. Or do you ask for my judgment on all your deeds? Your bearing is lowly in my presence, yet it is long now since you turned from your own way at my counsel. See, you have spoken skilfully as ever, but I, have I not seen your eye fixed on Mithrandir, seeking whether you said well or too much? He has long had your heart in his keeping.
My son, your father is old, but not yet dotard. I can see and hear, as was my wont, and little of what you have said or left unsaid is now hidden from me. I know the answer to many riddles. Alas, alas for Boromir!"
"If what I have done displeases you, my father," said Faramir quietly, "I wish I had known your counsel before the burden of so weighty a judgment was thrust on me."
"Would that have availed to change your judgment?" said Denethor. "You would still have done just so, I deem. I know you well. Ever your desire is to appear lordly and generous, as a king of old, gracious, gentle. That may well befit one of high race, if he sits in power and peace, but in desperate hours gentleness may be repaid with death."
"So be it," said Faramir.
"So be it," cried Denethor, "but not with your death only, Lord Faramir, with the death also of your father, and of all your people, whom it is your part to protect now that Boromir is gone."
"Do you wish, then," said Faramir, "that our places had been exchanged?"
"Yes, I wish that indeed," said Denethor, "for Boromir was loyal to me and no wizard's pupil. He would have remembered his father's need, and would not have squandered what fortune gave. He would have brought me a mighty gift."
For a moment Faramir's restraint gave way. "I would ask you, my father, to remember why it was that I, not he, was in Ithilien. On one occasion at least your counsel has prevailed, not long ago. It was the lord of the city that gave the errand to him."
"Stir not the bitterness in the cup that I mixed for myself," said Denethor. "Have I not tasted it now many nights upon my tongue, foreboding that worse yet lay in the dregs, as now indeed I find? Would it were not so! Would that this thing had come to me!"
"Comfort yourself," said Gandalf. "In no case would Boromir have brought it to you. He is dead, and died well. May he sleep in peace. Yet you deceive yourself. He would have stretched out his hand to this thing, and taking it, he would have fallen. He would have kept it for his own, and when he returned, you would not have known your son."
The face of Denethor set hard and cold.
"You found Boromir less apt to your hand, did you not?" he said softly. "But I, who was his father, say that he would have brought it to me. You are wise, maybe, Mithrandir, yet with all your subtleties you have not all wisdom. Counsels may be found that are neither the webs of wizards nor the haste of fools. I have in this matter more lore and wisdom than you deem."
"What, then, is your wisdom?" said Gandalf.
"Enough to perceive that there are two follies to avoid. To use this thing is perilous. At this hour, to send it in the hands of a witless halfling into the land of the enemy himself, as you have done, and this son of mine, that is madness."
"And the Lord Denethor, what would he have done?"
"Neither. But most surely not for any argument would he have set the thing at a hazard beyond all but a fool's hope, risking our utter ruin if the enemy should recover what he lost. Nay, it should have been kept hidden, hidden dark and deep, not used, I say, unless at the uttermost end of need, but set beyond his grasp, save by a victory so final that what then befell would not trouble us, being dead."
"You think, as is your wont, my lord, of Gondor only," said Gandalf. "Yet there are other men and other lives, and time still to be. And for me, I pity even his slaves."
"And where will other men look for help if Gondor falls?" answered Denethor. "If I had this thing now in the deep vaults of this citadel, We should not then shake with dread under this gloom, fearing the worst, and our counsels would be undisturbed.
If you don't trust me to endure the test, you don't know me yet.
Nevertheless, I do not trust you, said Gandalf. Had I done so, I could have sent this thing hither to your keeping, and spared myself and others much anguish. And now, hearing you speak, I trust you less, no more than Boromir. Nay, stay your wrath. I do not trust myself in this, and I refuse this thing, even as a freely given gift. You are strong, and can still in some matters govern yourself, Denethor. Yet if you had received this thing, it would have overthrown you. Were it buried beneath the roots of Mindolwin, still it would burn your mind away, as the darkness grows, and the yet worse things follow that soon will come upon us.